If you're just joining us, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kay Dircher-Kent. Thanks so much for being here on a Monday. We're visiting with our state's chief animal health officer. Which health issues do you think Wisconsin should be working to address in pets, in livestock, wildlife? What are you concerned about? What do you think about having to test dogs that come from other states or countries? Are you concerned about untested dogs spreading diseases to other pets or even people? Join in at 800-642-1234. Dr. Darlene Conkle is a state veterinarian for the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. She was appointed last month after serving as acting state veterinarian since June of last year. And in her previous role as assistant state veterinarian, she led Wisconsin's response to an outbreak of avian flu in 2015. Dr. Darlene Conkle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me this morning.
Well, let's start with efforts to fight the spread of diseases in dogs. The state already prohibits dogs from coming into Wisconsin without being cleared for rabies. What can you tell us about the two other diseases under consideration for mandatory testing? That they are brucellosis and heartworm.
Right. We did, in a proposed rule package, have requirements for testing dogs coming into the state, having a negative test for canine brucellosis and also heartworm. We did have an extended comment period for that rule. And just so you know, we did remove those provisions at this point because we had a much larger rule package going through with requirements for other livestock.
And you had a lot of comments on this.
We did. We had about 1,800 comments. So just want to say as well, the reason the additional testing requirements were proposed is because we were seeing increased numbers of comments and increased investigations due to dogs coming into the state positive for canine brucellosis, some of those dogs having been imported from out of the country and having been adopted already at the point where we realized there was a positive in Canada as part of the shipment. So we had over 30 quarantines associated with that instance. And over the past couple of years have had increasing numbers of investigations due to both canine brucellosis and heartworm. So they're very different diseases, but each of them is an important disease. Canine brucellosis has potential human health impacts as well. And, of course, heartworm is a very debilitating, sometimes fatal disease of dogs. So they are important diseases, but what we found out through our extended comment period is that there's a lot of concern, but also concern about testing and so forth. So we did elect to pull that back at this point, felt it needed further consideration.
How contagious are these diseases?
Heartworm is spread through mosquitoes. So even in Wisconsin, of course, we have a pretty hefty mosquito population. Heartworm's contagious between dogs. We see it more prevalent in the southern states, but we are starting to see more of it up here as well. Canine brucellosis can be spread readily between dogs. It could spread even among dogs that have been neutered or spayed. So they can transmit the disease once they are infected, even after they're neutered. So through vaginal secretions, reproductive secretions, but also urine, nasal secretions as well.
And how often are these diseases transmitted to humans? What is the connection to humans?
In canine brucellosis, there is a potential that it's a zoonotic disease, so transmissible to people. We don't have good data on that, on the incidence in people related to contact with dogs. So we just don't have that data available. We know what can happen. And in humans, the disease can be debilitating as well, causes fevers, recurrent fevers, joint issues, and it is a systemic disease as well. But we just don't have the data due to really a lack of testing.
And when you look at testing that Wisconsin is doing versus other states, how are other states approaching this when you take in dogs from other countries or other states?
Other states do have regulations as well. We did review those during the course of our rule, and they're pretty varied. Many states don't yet have regulations on the books related to canine brucellosis or heartworm with respect to importing dogs, and a handful do.
We're talking with state veterinarian Darlene Conkle at the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. You can join in. What questions do you have for our state's chief animal health officer? Which health issues do you think the state should be working to address in pets, in dogs, livestock, wildlife? What are you concerned about? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Conkle, to support additional tests, the state has cited a case earlier this year that you mentioned where South Korean dogs came to Wisconsin. Two confirmed cases of brucellosis were found after the dogs were placed in the shelters and some of them were adopted. What red flags did that case cause?
Well, as I mentioned, it resulted in over 30 quarantines. And just the fact that so many dogs, as you would expect, had already been adopted out. They'd already been placed with families. These families had already formed a bond with those animals, of course. They'd become part of the family. So to learn later on that we needed to investigate these, of course, it was emotional for the families, a lot of education and a lot of outreach. So a lot of resources from our staff, but also a lot of concern.
Yeah. The Humane Society is concerned that mandatory testing could place more burden on animal shelters in terms of, you know, who pays for this testing and how does it get done? How much does it cost? What about the cost burden?
Mm-hmm. And those were a lot of the comments that we received that were not in support of the new rule. So there is a cost to testing. For heartworm, relatively minimal, and I don't have the exact numbers for you today, sorry. For canine brucellosis, there would be a cost. Again, there's an initial screening test, and then if we do see positives on that, there's a confirmatory test that can rule it out.
The state says quarantines and cleanups were ordered for locations exposed to the brucellosis cases, and at least one dog was put down. Is the cost of proactively testing dogs, is it worthwhile if it means avoiding the cost of quarantine and cleanup later in the process?
That was our thought, you know, in additionally formulating this rule and going through the initial hearings and comment periods, that based on the increasing numbers of investigations we were seeing, that testing and ensuring that animals coming into the state were negative for the disease prior to entering seemed like the best course of action to avoid some of these other issues.
Do you see room for compromise here to address these issues of cost, these issues of process, like how do we get all of this done? How do we manage this? Do you see any potential there for compromise?
Certainly see potential for more conversation. And that's why we did pull it back out of the rule package. One, it was an extensive rule that I mentioned relates to a lot of what we do in our division with livestock and other companion animals. So we wanted to move the rest of it ahead. And just based on the numbers of comments we received, definitely feel like it merits more conversation.
Yeah.
If we're to move forward. Right now, we've pulled it back and we're moving forward with the rest of the rule package.
Well, let's move to the farm here. You led our state's response to the large avian influenza outbreak in 2015. What did you learn from that experience?
Oh, we learned quite a lot. That was our largest animal disease response that we've had in Wisconsin. We needed to depopulate over 2 million birds. In that case, we had 10 positive cases of high path avian influenza in 2015. And it was the largest animal disease response to date in the U.S. as well. It cost over $1 billion for the USDA as well. So we had prepared over the years prior to that. Avian influenza viruses circulate in wild birds, and we know they're out there. It's relatively uncommon to see the type that will mutate into a high path version. So,
and you say high pathological?
Highly pathogenic.
Highly pathogenic.
So okay. Highly pathogenic strains are the strains that kill birds.
Okay. And so what did we learn about our own vulnerabilities as a state in the wake of these outbreaks?
Well, we learned that we always have to keep vigilant. In some cases, such as the avian influenza viruses, they are circulating, and there's potential for one to mutate to a highly pathogenic strain. We learned, though, that we we responded effectively, that our training had been effective for us. But it's a matter of resources as well. We're a relatively small division with 45 or so people in the Division of Animal Health. We requested additional resources from USDA during that outbreak. And
did they provide?
Yes, they did. Yeah, they provided us an incident management team that helped us respond. But USDA has limited resources as well. And when there are other outbreaks going on in other states throughout the country, their resources are strapped as well. So we learned that we need to really leverage our networks and continue to train together with other agencies and with our stakeholders.
So what steps has Wisconsin taken since that outbreak to prevent other outbreaks in livestock?
Well, we're working with farmers and producers all the time, and our partner agencies, our sister agencies. So we've worked hard on promoting good biosecurity and awareness of disease potential in our livestock and poultry populations. We're working to be quicker when we respond, more responsive with capabilities for depopulating animals quickly and humanely, and also disposal capabilities as well.
We're talking with Dr. Darlene Conkle, the state's chief animal health officer at the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Your questions for her front and center at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Wisconsin's chief animal health officer? Are you a veterinarian or a vet tech? What problems do you often see in animals? What do you think people should know about? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the State Capitol Report in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we have Dr. Darlene Conkle with us. She was appointed last month as state veterinarian for the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and she'd been serving as acting state veterinarian for over a year. Still time for you. What questions do you have for the state's chief animal health officer? What health issues do you think the state should be addressing? What issues do you have? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to the phones now. Carrie is joining us from Cudahy. Hi, Carrie.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I have a farmer that sprays the field with some chemical that kills all the growth. And also, the previous year's corn is laying on the ground. And I wonder, how does that affect the wild population of turkeys and blue jays and birds that forage on that corn from the previous year that has now been sprayed with some chemical?
Carrie, thanks so much for the call. Dr. Conkle, what do we know about birds and the chemicals that are sprayed on crops?
Actually, that's a little bit out of my area of expertise, not being a toxicologist, but I'd encourage, Carrie, I'd encourage you to either email us with that question, and we can certainly direct it to wildlife veterinarians with the DNR, and they might have more information for you.
Conservation, biologists, and others. Yeah, Carrie, thanks so much. Tom now in Washburn has a question. Tom, hi.
Hi. I'm not sure if this is the appropriate person or not, but I used to raise hogs. We would maybe raise 200 a year, and a year or so ago, a new testing requirement came out where we had to test for a couple of animal diseases, and the requirement was that you collect a saliva sample from the animals and send it in to the lab for testing. The test was about $195, I think, and it was only good for 3 months. But the challenge was collecting the saliva sample from hogs. The methodology that was presented in a video and the site you went to learn about the process, where hogs are in confinement, where you just hang a rope in the pen and they attack it and salivate on it and then collect your sample. Well, I raised pastured hogs, and when you hang a rope in their pen, even when they're in the pen, because they're usually on pasture, they weren't even interested because they're used to seeing more interesting things all day on their pastures. So I ended up having to run around with a modified spatula trying to collect
milliliters
of saliva from hogs, and you can't put your hand in their mouth or anything like that. So it was a major challenge just to collect the sample. It took me 3 hours to get 5 milliliters.
Well, Tom, thanks for that. I just want to pause here. Dr. Conkle, what's going on with that test and the difficulty in getting that sample?
Tom's right. We did have a new rule come into place a little over a year ago now, requiring testing for hogs moving, testing for porcine epidemic diarrhea, and also porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome, so PERS. You can take blood samples to test for those diseases, but the other method, as Tom's describing, is to have the pigs kind of chew on a rope, because pigs are curious animals and like to chew on things. So that was a methodology that had been used for other diseases as well. Over the last year and a half, we have learned that there's been challenges, particularly with pasture-raised pigs, because they're not that interested in chewing on the rope. Our swine program managers talked with a number of people over the past months and come up with some kind of creative ways to get those samples. So, again, Tom, I'd encourage you to either give us a call at the office or email, and I can put you in touch with our swine program manager, who might have some ideas for you, too.
So there are some other workarounds to get that saliva sample.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just some other ways to try to get them a little more interested in chewing on that rope.
Yeah, Tom, thanks so much. A year ago this month, the state started investigating this rare outbreak of bovine tuberculosis on a farm in Wanakee. What have we learned there from that investigation?
And that was different for us as well. We hadn't had a case of bovine TB in the state for a number of years. So you're right, that's about a year ago that we identified a cow that was positive from that herd. She was identified going through slaughter channels. So our slaughter inspections worked, and that cow was identified and traced back to the Dane County farm. We're about a year into it now. The procedure for eliminating TB from that herd is called a test and removal process. So every 60 days or so, a little more than 60 days, we're going through and testing all the cattle in that herd above 2 months of age. So we are well into that process right now. In total, I believe we've identified 8 positive animals, most of those during the very first test. So
it was contained.
It's contained. The herd was quarantined immediately when we did identify the positive animal. And so far it's been going fairly well. There's a series of tests we need to go through just to look and see. We want to make sure that we're identifying any potential positives from that herd. Eventually, when we're through with that process, there'll be more spaced testing before the quarantine's released.
Before the quarantine is lifted. Mm-hmm. Talking with Dr. Darlene Conkle, she is the state's chief animal health officer at the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We're talking with her on the state capitol report. Dr. Conkle, we've seen widespread flooding. We've seen disasters, recent tornadoes. How much responsibility do owners have to their animals in these kinds of emergencies?
Well, we realize that animals are part of the family, particularly companion animals, but also livestock and poultry. They're part of people's livelihoods and really part of the whole community. So we're encouraging everyone to think of your animals when you practice disaster planning for your family. Everybody's encouraged to have a plan, to have backup plans and contact. So have a plan for your animals as well. And that includes perhaps places you could go, either with relatives or friends that would accept your pets along with you. It includes identifying your pets, either with microchips or something else identifiable. A good practice is to take pictures of your animals with you, so that if you do become separated, it's easier to reunite you with your pet. And also to have all of your medications and vaccination records and so forth on hand and ready to go should you need to evacuate. Of course, it's a little harder to plan for large animals, for cattle and for horses. Can't pick them up in a carrier and move them to higher ground, but definitely backup sources of power. In the case of horses, training them to enter and leave a trailer well so that you can leave with them if you need to, and identifying alternative sources of feed that might be brought in if your normal sources are not available right away.
Carlton from Keeler called in to share concerns about a foreign force spreading superbugs through our pets. Are you seeing more animals coming into Wisconsin as livestock or pets than previous years in terms of superbugs?
Not seeing that so far. Okay. Again, that's a concern. I think you're mentioning the antibiotic-resistant organisms.
Yeah.
Definitely, we're aware of that. I can't really speak to any trends. Just don't have the data on that yet.
You were talking earlier about biosecurity, and how does that play out as a state veterinarian? What are you working on there?
We're just working on good communications with farmers and with companion animal owners as well. And biosecurity is just a method to keep your animals safe from disease and to keep yourself healthy as well. For human health, it can be just as simple as washing your hands often. And for animals, it's minimizing the risk of spreading diseases. So just following good practices like washing off boots and disinfecting boots after you're out in the barn with animals, having alternative coveralls and things you can change into and out of easily. Also isolating new animals that you bring into the herd, keeping vaccinations current, and keeping good records.
Well, Dr. Conkle, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Dr. Darlene Conkle is Wisconsin's Chief Animal Health Officer in her position as State Veterinarian for the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Just ahead, it is Mondays with Mike. You have aligned to WPR's Chief Operating Officer, Michael Arnold, at 800-642-1234. What programs do you listen to? What do you not care for? Bring on your insights right after this news update. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the State Capitol Report here on The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network.